Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Tuesday. It feels like Friday. It is the last drive of the year. This is our Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve show, if you will, because thanks to management, we have off until January 2nd. So this will be our final show. We'd love for you to join in. We were talking a while ago. We were thinking maybe we'd just do Christmas carols through the show.
Yeah, just public domain.
Yeah, why not?
Christmas carols all show long.
I can hardly hear me.
Hold on, you're up now. Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. So we could do that. No, we'll talk whatever you would like. And, you know, sports would make sense. Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be.
I mean, do you have strong feeling? I mean, we can jump right into a couple of things that, you know, if you want to get, you know, sportsy. But, like, the playoff we didn't really get into yesterday.
No,
because we got back into the swing of talking some Auburn stuff, right? And there was enough going on over the weekend.
Yeah, there have been enough players that had entered the portal and so forth, and Auburn basketball
right.
We hadn't talked about. So.
And Brian was here, so we were pretty Auburn-focused yesterday, but you have those college football playoff games, and I think they did set up really intriguing quarterfinal. Like, you know, you've got four games, and we'll see what happens. But, I mean, yeah, it could be chalky. You know, it's tempting to go Big Ten SEC
semifinals. That's most of the teams. I mean, you got Texas Tech is
Miami.
And Miami.
Yeah.
Texas Tech, Miami, the only non-SEC Big Ten teams.
Right, and you could go, I mean, did Alabama figure things out to a degree where, you put them?
Maybe. I still don't know. I mean,
Ole Miss, Georgia.
The Alabama offense still didn't click the way, you know, that it was midseason. I heard somebody earlier today saying, you know, this is midseason Alabama. They didn't quite look that way. Oklahoma helped them a lot, but Alabama did what they had to. They made plays, and no question, credit to them for coming back from down 17-0. When they went the length of the field and scored to make it 17-7, Oklahoma has still had that opportunity. I mean, Mateer opting to make the throw instead of running for an obvious first down, threw to a guy who was wide open who dropped the would-be touchdown pass, and then the punter for some reason just dropped the ball and didn't kick it. But, I mean, that really turned the game. But we'll see. I mean, going to be really interesting. Alabama about a 6-point underdog against Indiana, and there's no question in my mind who the more talented team is, and it's not the number one team in the country, Indiana.
Yeah, but who'd have thought when Cignetti, you know, a couple of years ago, he's working there, right? And now he goes from the staff at Alabama to being favored against Alabama in a playoff game as the head coach of Indiana. Like it's a Rocky-esque story, right?
It is. And Nick Saban, it's like the Nick Saban family tree. It's like Nick's descendants are all out there coaching now. My goodness.
I mean, you could have a Cignetti Kirby Smart national championship game. Speaking of two guys who had, you know, really tight relationships with Nick Saban.
Well, you've got Dan Lanning, Mario Cristobal, who were Saban assistants as well.
And also none of those guys are the head coach at Alabama.
Right.
And still you've got a lot of Nick Saban's, you know, his impact on that program is still it's still pretty deep. But Nick Saban disciple isn't coaching there, but you have Nick Saban descendants all over the college football playoffs. I think you've got four. Like as cool as it would have been to have a Cinderella story with one of the group of five teams, you didn't get that.
No, you didn't.
And I know that's become like that's a huge topic now, right? Like the thought of
it's just now dawned on people that these games they would like more competitive games, you know, in the earlier rounds.
You know, when the playoff was smaller, I liked the idea of giving the group of five its own playoff. I think now that you've expanded it to 12, and you're probably not stopping at 12, right? Like the thought
oh,
that
no,
it could go.
Oh no, there's no way they're stopping at 12.
Right. So
I hope that I'm really not ready to jump. Apparently, the Big Ten wants 24.
Yeah.
That's a little much.
No, it makes some folks seasick. I think the thought of jumping it, unless you're, you know, like I've said before, unless conference championship weekend is dead, and we are playing 12 games and then starting the playoff. If that's happening, then you could maybe talk me into 24 or 32 because it doesn't seem to be as grueling of a load, and you could maybe get some of these games.
No, like you could get. So you're not adding the extra game. The first post regular season game would be a playoff game.
Exactly. If you played 30, and I know 32 is still a big number for some
it
folks.
It is.
But if you played that on conference championship game weekend, and got down to 16 that way, I feel like you'd probably have the right 16 in the quarterfinal.
Yeah,
like,
and why do you need you know 2 weeks in between games once you get in?
Which is why I would think the, right. if you're doing, because I think that if you're going to keep playing conference championship game weekend and expand the thing to 24 or have the play-in games and then 24, like you're talking about a big number of teams mm-hmm. still alive going into that first weekend of the. You know, the last weekend of the regular season.
Well, if you did that, that generally is the first weekend in December. Yeah. If you did that the first weekend in December, even if you had 32 teams, if you had 24, you'd still play it like it's 32. You just have byes. But, I mean, so you do that, you get to 16 after week one of December. You get to 8 after week two of December. You get to 4 after week three of December. And then the week before New Year's, you're down to the final two. Then you can take 10 days, 2 weeks, whatever, to play your championship game, and you have one game after January 1st, if you do that.
I think I like 32 more than 24.
Oh, if it comes down to it, I'd just as soon have no buys.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and seed them and play them.
And give everyone at least one home game and maybe a couple of home games, depending on how you want to structure it. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, if you get, you go through two weekends, you're to 8, and then you can have 8 sites. But yes, you play the first two weekends on campus sites.
And with 32, you could also, you know, I sort of like the idea of every team in the bowl subdivision believes at the beginning of the season they can make the field.
Yeah.
And with 32, you'd have that because you'd have most. I mean, if you want with 32, you'd probably have a spot for every conference champion.
With 32, absolutely, you'd have a spot. I would think for every conference champ, because with 32, you're going to have some 4-loss teams.
Yeah, with 32 in there, 32 is probably 10 conference champions and 22 at-larges,
yes.
And that's still, you know, that's a robust field.
That's going to get you without question everybody who's in the top 25. Plus.
Which is the question is, do you want the college? It's a little bit like basketball. Like, do you want the college football playoff to include everyone with a good case, or do you want it to, like, do you want it to be exclusive or inclusive, right? Do you want teams like Notre Dame not making it, or do you want it to be to where, you know, last year's Texas team, remember, was in the NCAA tournament, and you saw them a couple of times,
yeah.
Right? They were barely .500 overall, terrible record in conference.
I don't have to fire their coach.
Yeah.
I don't have to have teams that just, oh, gee, you know, maybe on a good day they'd be able to compete, be in there. No, I mean, I don't think it's the end of the world if there is some strong conversation about a couple of teams that didn't make it.
I mean,
but it's going to be that way. That's going to be that way about no matter how many teams you have in.
With the magic wand, what would be your college football postseason?
Mine is 16.
I think so too.
I'm just going to go ahead and say 16.
Just the best 16.
The best 16.
Yeah.
The best 16,
no rules about conferences or inclusion. It's we empower a group of experts we trust, and on selection. Do you still play conference championship games?
I would think not.
Yeah, I mean, I just they seem redundant especially with it. I mean, maybe some.
I mean, I guess you could, because that would be the same number of games as if you went to a 24 or 32.
And if you're,
but I don't really see the reason in it, because of situations like you had this year where it doesn't help the team that loses the conference championship game. Let's go back to tiebreakers and things like that for conference champs. If you don't have head to head, I mean. The second place team should be in, and you know, if the conference is good enough, you're not going to have any concerns. So you may have multiple teams get to hang conference banners, SEC title banners, or conference banners, the way you do in basketball now.
What about one bid leagues? Would you still say conference championship games for you know conferences that are generally thought of as like they might need the conference championship, or would you just get rid of it completely?
I would think it'd be better without conference championship games for them.
Okay.
Because if they have a great year, I mean, they've always run the risk more of getting hurt by a conference championship game. Because if they're already making a point and they're a top 15 team, you know, playing the conference championship game and having either players injured or somebody or getting knocked off is just gonna drop them out.
If JMU had lost to Troy in that Sun Belt championship game, they would have missed the college football playoff, and maybe not playing at all would have been. I mean, even though they won the game, like their position would have been more secure without the championship games at all. No, I think that's. I mean, the best 16 is probably.
Yep.
You know, I think it would be a pretty good compromise.
We'll see. But I mean, I think it's fair. I think it gives plenty of teams the opportunity. You're not asking, you know, for you to have that perfect season. You can have a couple of bumps in the road.
I do think the right eight are probably in the quarterfinal, right? All things considered. Like A&M had their chance to play their way into the right eight.
Oh, absolutely they did.
Notre Dame, all things considered, had their chance to beat a couple of these teams and prove that they belong in this field. So it's for all the talk about what the committee was going to do and who the committee decided to pick and the backdoor routes to, like, I think you've got the right. You can maybe
I think you have the right eight.
I think these are probably the right eight. And so, like, you know, it was a roundabout way to get there, but here we are. And I think the biggest mystery of the bunch is Texas Tech, because you've seen the others against competition like this.
Texas Tech, I mean, we'll see. I mean, they are such a prime example of what NIL can be. I mean, for a team to, you know, have come like they have from just being a middling team to extremely talented now, and they've invested well. They have a very active investor who has really turned that program around.
Well, how about this, Bill? The way people are talking about Group of Five teams not being automatically included in the playoff, I think a poor showing by Texas Tech, and you're also talking about, well, this is the second year in a row that you had a Big 12 team, and Arizona State versus Texas was close enough.
It was,
but the game was in Sun Devil Stadium because of the seating rules, and it would be the second year in a row that you have a Big 12 team kind of no show in the.
Yeah, I don't think you're gonna hear as much about that. I mean, you're not gonna. I mean, they're not gonna be one. The SEC and the Big Ten are the ones that are stamping for. Number a they want guaranteed multiple bids, whereas I think as long as those teams look, if they're not a top 16 team and they're the conference champ, then they don't deserve to be in a playoff. I'm not for giving them automatic bids. I mean, look, the best team in that league ought to be in the top 16, deserve to be in the playoff.
I do think if you ask the ACC commissioner or the Big 12 commissioner their reservations about 16 with no restrictions, no prerequisites, they'd be concerned that it would be a heavy SEC Big Ten college football playoff.
Yeah, but what can they do about it?
Exactly. No, that's the thing. And the closer this thing goes to being if this gets to be a smaller and smaller pool of haves in college football, it'll be SEC and Big Ten halves. And I mean, I wonder if this playoff is sort of a glimpse of that. When you look at the eight teams left, there's several Big Ten teams.
Yeah, of course.
SEC teams.
You got to remember there's still some talk out there, and it's about the SEC and the Big Ten going ahead and trying to get the best of what's out there from the ACC and the Big 12. Mm. So, I mean, I still think that, yes, it's not unreasonable or unfeasible to think that we're going to have two power conferences, and everybody, you know, the top schools in the ACC and the Big 12 will be doing everything they can to get in either the Big 10 or the SEC.
Yeah, I would look at if I were an ACC team that wasn't, you know, perceived as a target for the Big 10 or the SEC, I would look at what happened to Washington State and Oregon State, right? And I'd be like, so, you know, look at what happens when you stay with a league and the crown jewels get taken away and, you know, and join other conferences instead. And I mean, you can, and I don't know. I mean, it's probably a, if you look at the Big 12 and the ACC, it's debatable how many of those schools, like if the SEC and the, and the, if the SEC and the Big 10 wanted to go to 20 something each.
Yeah.
Like how many, how many schools from
20,
those
go to 20 or 24 each.
Yeah. How many of the, how many of those, you know, how many of those ACC and Big 10 schools would make a ton of sense? You know, it's or Big 12 schools would make a ton
there,
of sense.
There's some of them that would make sense, not strictly because of football, but because of their overall athletic programs.
This, by the way, this is the nightmare scenario that the Texas Tech guy, not Mahomes, but the booster running the commercials earlier in the season. Like, that's his concern, is you could have, you know, everyone's got to get on one of these two boats and there's only so many seats, and Texas Tech might not have a seat. And what happens? What happens then? Like, what happens to your school if? And I think Oregon State and Washington State, unfortunately, then, show you.
Yeah, you run the risk of being a, you know, one of the best group of five schools.
Yeah,
or a group of however many schools.
And it wasn't
the others.
It wasn't all that long ago. Like, those schools had teams that could compete for conference championships.
Yeah, and for playoff spots.
And that's not in the. I mean, you know, unless things change drastically. That those days are probably over, and that could be the future for a lot of these programs.
334-321-1390, that's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar.
We're giving Andy today off, you think?
Yeah, remember, yeah. Andy said he's okay, got some family things going on. I think he's probably traveling, as a matter of fact.
I was gone last Tuesday, so I did not hear.
That's right. But so that was our final visit with Andy. I think we'll get Jake. Today.
Best wishes to
the
Berchams. You know, really, really appreciate, you know, all year long getting to talk with the voice of the Auburn Tigers. I talked with Justin Ferguson. Apparently, Andy Berchum knows his way around Indianapolis, and had some recommendations.
I would think he probably does.
And had some recommendations for some pretty good food for Justin to try, because Justin, I don't think Justin had been there before. He hadn't been there very often. We'll catch up with Andy Bertram about his adventures with the men's basketball team soon. I think the next time we talk to him, he will have been to Athens, Georgia.
Yeah,
And Auburn will have played
Will have opened the SEC against the Bulldogs, who are now 11-1.
Yeah, how about that?
And one more game before they get ready for conference play against Auburn.
And then we've talked about there's a chance Auburn men's basketball ran into a couple of buzzsaws with Purdue and Arizona and Michigan. I guess that theory is going to be tested when play. I mean, nothing against the teams that Auburn's about to open conference play with. But those teams, like if Auburn's weaknesses are exploited against those teams, you might have a different kind of problem on your hands. And that's where, you know, being able to open conference play with a couple of wins, right? Go to Georgia, open at home against A&M, then you've got Arkansas. Like if you're,
you need to win at least two of those three.
If you profile as a team that's going to be competing for the league title, like that's a series. I think that's a sequence of games where you need to do well.
Yeah, we can talk more basketball. We'd love to hear from you. Anything on your mind, sports wise, as we just are underway here on the final show of 2025. Bill and Dan here in the studio on the Tuesday.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Again, our final show of 2025, as we'll get a break until January 2nd. It will be a pretty busy day on January 2nd. When we come back, I mean, there will have been we'll be down to the Final Four in the college football playoff. The college football transfer portal will have opened at midnight on January 2nd. So it will have been open overnight. A player's officially in it. We'll be a day away from the start of SEC basketball play. There's no telling what else locally there will be, but I mean, a lot that will go on between now and then.
Yeah, and I think it's been really interesting to see the different opinions about Auburn's various players deciding to go into the transfer portal. I think we had some callers yesterday who made different points, and including I think it was Brett who pointed out, like, you know, these guys are you have folks on one side of the aisle who were pointing out, like, these guys were big time prospects and have played a lot for Auburn over the last 2 years, and then I think other folks have sort of raised the question of how much do we know about the production Auburn is losing from these various.
Well, I've heard some other people say, well, you're 5-7. How good were they? Well, some of them I think were pretty good. I mean, another prominent player entering the portal today, Robert Woodyard, and I was, you know, I got a couple of texts when that news came out. It's like, is anybody going to be back? And well, Xavier Atkins, we know, will on the defense. But let's see. Auburn had Keldrick Falk is moving on to the NFL. So, you knew, yeah, I mean,
and he is the,
you knew he wasn't going to come back.
I believe he is the only underclassman who has declared for the NFL draft.
That is correct. He's the only one that I know of.
Yeah.
The only one that I know of. All right. Keron Crawford is out of eligibility. Bobby Jamison Travis is out of eligibility. Is there anybody else who's out of eligibility from the starting defense? I was thinking that Auburn had the opportunity to return.
Was Robinson part of the starting defense?
At times.
Would he count?
I guess he could, but then you could also say that, you know, a couple of the other guys could be returning starters.
Again, just sort of raising the question of, like, he would be.
But the way I looked at it is I believe we felt that Auburn could return players who had started at 8 different spots on defense. Okay, I mean, because Jaquez had started, but New Boy started, Champ has started. I mean, you've had different guys that had started that could return. So I think that was the optimistic way of looking at things, was if DJ Durkin stays, Auburn might be able to bring back at least 8 starters on defense. Well, 4 of those 8 have announced that they're entering the transfer portal. So now Auburn's not going to be able to bring back more than 4 starters on defense from this past year.
And I keep coming back to, it's unknowable, right, exactly what motivates these guys. Like, how much of it is driven by, how much of their initial decision to come to Auburn was driven by money, and how much of their decision to stay or go right now was driven by the money versus the other things that can be discussed, you know, within recruitment of a college football player. So I think that's going to be, like, it feels like Auburn's got it's a bit of a double-edged sword, mm-hmm. where you have somewhat unproven players that have been compensated like stars already and would expect that to continue. And if they, you know, if it's not going to be at Auburn, they think it could be somewhere else. And then you have players that have sort of proven that they belong on an SEC stage with eligibility remain, you know, with eligibility left over and with the chance to improve. But do they want to continue their careers at Auburn? And how much of that is driven by money versus other motivations? And so I think that's because I understand, folks, if we knew it was all money and Auburn's offers weren't good enough.
Yeah.
That would be
one thing. I mean, and
reason to panic.
Have reason. Yeah, absolutely. You'd have reason to say, well, then you're not going to be able to compete. But we don't know that. That's the difference. You know, we continue to talk about and hear that college sports is now, it's professional sports, but it's not, because there is not the transparency. You don't know. I mean, you know when players are hitting free agency in professional sports, why they're going and what they have gotten and what they're hoping to get, and then what they do get. I mean, that's something that is, it's common knowledge of what the contracts are, what the agreements are. You don't have that in college. And, of course, the other thing is, in college, players – choose schools, the schools don't choose the players. There's not a it's not a draft like there is in professional sports.
Well, and players also, even in professional sports, it's not always, well, I'm just going to pick the place that offers me the biggest contract.
No, no, you hear some guys that have been in whatever sport for a while, if they haven't been on a winner, I mean, it's not uncommon at all to hear to see players take a little less to go someplace where they can try to win a ring.
Among other priorities, right? Some guys prioritize weather.
Right.
Right? Some guys
prioritize climate, right? Yeah. Where they want to be, their family. I mean, it's like, what, you know, many, many different decisions go into it.
Sometimes you have family ties with, mm-hmm. with, you know, an administrator or a coach or something like that. So, no, I just think it's, I understand folks who really wanted to see a lot of the roster retained, you know, of the guys who had played as freshmen and sophomores, you know, thinking, you know, you want to see where this ride ends up.
Yeah, especially ones who had produced and had eligibility remaining. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, you'd like to have those guys back.
It feels like, you know, who would strike you as the biggest dominoes that haven't fallen yet?
Cam. Right?
Cam Coleman, Connor Liu. Would be, you know, junior.
Jeremiah Cobb.
Yeah, Jeremiah Cobb.
You're right. Connor Liu.
Eric Singleton.
Eric Singleton?
I mean, I'll
tell you a couple. New boy and Eric Winters.
Deuce.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got some. I mean, I would say.
Now, most of those have produced, actually. Deuce has had one really good game. Well, most of those other guys have started a little bit.
Would you say, like, and no disrespect to any of the guys who have decided to declare, but if we had made a list of the most important retentions after the Iron Bowl, I think a lot of the names we haven't said yet would be among the biggest names you would be talking about holding on to. Now, the fact that I think Jay Crawford would have certainly been.
Oh, Jay Crawford would have been on my. It wouldn't have been too long a list.
Malik would have been on that list. I think Amaris Williams would have been on folks' list. So, like, it's not to dismiss some of the guys who have decided that they're going into the portal, but some of those dominoes that haven't fallen yet are huge, are absolutely huge. And I think you can make a
still 10 days away.
Yeah, and you can make form a real conclusion when you get some of those, right? When you get the answers to some of those players, because that's going to be, I think that those some of those players we just named play a pretty outsized role in how that first season is going to go for Alex Golish. I mean, who he brings in matters a lot as well, but what can he do with some of those players that people are?
Well, he's he's been talking and talked with us. You know, this past week when we had him on Friday, he still was talking about, you know, player retention, even though he said things change day to day. But he by no means sounded like he wanted to just toss this roster completely away.
No, and I think it's important to remember, like, the email. We mentioned it yesterday. The email, the announcement from John Cohen when Hugh Freeze was let go mentioned – the work Hugh Freeze did with the roster.
Right.
Right? So it would be
upgrading the roster.
It would be surprising if Alex Golish came in and said, all right, let's push the button and all these guys can leave and we won't really put up a fight for any of them. Is it surprising that he's being selective with who he's or does Auburn need to be selective with who they bring back? It's, you know, that's an interesting question. And are all of these decisions, how many of these players are leaving because they want something Auburn can't offer, right? I guess would be the other. Like, when you talk about some of the guys that have played 2 years.
Right.
And, I mean, we wondered about this with Malik.
Right.
Kay and Lee's got a question, you know, there too. Jay Crawford. Like, some of these guys can seemingly write their own ticket virtually anywhere, you'd think, based on their 2 years of experience.
You see what Pete Nako said today about Malcolm Simmons?
What did he say?
He said the top two schools trending for him right now are Kentucky and Arkansas.
Interesting. Okay. So, you know, I wondered if he really wants to be a number one, is it going to be?
Yeah, maybe.
Is it going to be at a place that's looking like a preseason top 10, top 15 program? If he wants to be the highest paid number two or number three, you know what I mean? Like, maybe it opens things up, but maybe, you know, maybe
at Kentucky or Arkansas,
exactly,
he could go and be their number one guy.
And I wonder if Kentucky's got a young quarterback who made some strides. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I could understand, but Malcolm, Yeah, if he were to end up in a school projected near the bottom of the SEC, I would think he really valued being a number one wherever he goes.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll get to your phone calls, 334-321-1390, when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
From all of us at Northwest
02 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Again, a reminder in case you're just joining us, this will be the final show until January 2nd. We are very pleased that we're going to get some time off and hope that everyone has the best of holidays here for the next 10 days before we come back.
Yeah, this is the Drive Christmas party that we're having.
That's it.
This is the holiday party episode.
All right, let's get to the Drive hotline, and Bill gets us started. Hey, Bill.
Hey, guys. I was going to mention something about, you talk about players that want a 5-7 team, and that's a good point. But keep in mind of the difference in play, certainly offensively, and maybe taking a little bit of a step back defensively with, Coach Durkin having to pay more attention to the overall game. But once Hugh Freeze stepped away, things looked a lot better. And you have to wonder, can you really pin that on players in the portal now and say, well, they were 5-7 team? But I get to.
No, I'm with you on that. I tend to agree with that. I'm not gonna say just because these players, didn't produce a winning record that you can just toss them.
Yeah, because we saw the difference. The Kentucky game, I think, where our offense came to a grinding halt. Mm-hmm. If you'd have played Alabama under those same circumstances, they'd have run out so far out of the building, we'd have played the ball the last quarter in the street. I'm disappointed. I hope this guy knows what he's doing. Funny, I said this 3 years ago about Hugh Freeze, but
oh yeah,
I just don't think you can lose everybody. And where are you going in the portal to get 40 players? I mean, I'm not trying to sound an alarm or anything, but some of these guys, I don't think all of them, but some of these guys, I think you needed to get back. And here's another thing, and you brought this up a couple of times, or maybe it was Jason, or I can't remember who, but I'm not sure how many more 5-7 seasons the fans are going to take before you start seeing a lot of empty blotches of seating in a stadium. Because people are about tired. I mean, Dan, you made a good point. What are you selling these days? You're selling hope and change?
The glass guy
sold that too. And I think some of these guys just want to win. Now, we hadn't won in a while.
I wouldn't want to put unnecessary pressure on a guy stepping into a situation where the team has had several losing seasons in a row. Like, I wouldn't want to be unrealistic with what Golish needs to do in year one just because Auburn's had. But I mean, it's a valid concern. How much longer can, how much longer will the fan support remain at that level without the results on the field changing? But I would still think that, I would still think in year one, progress is important. You could sort of debate how much progress, but you'd like to see in year one that you are in the, that you have the right guy, right? Because you've had warnings in year one in the last couple of coaches, right? Hugh Freeze loses to New Mexico State in year one. Brian Harsin has the collapse against Mississippi State in year one at home. Like, there have been warnings in that first year in previous administrations that you have not had the right guy. And I guess that shows you that the bar is a little bit lower, but it's like I would be perfectly happy with a season that shows you Alex Golish is, you know, has a sustainable, realistic plan to make this thing a winner soon.
That's a great point, Dan, about those first season signs. Bill, I mean, we're a little older than Dan. I mean, I can recall. Look, you know, Tommy Tuberville's first year, Auburn's 5-6, but it was a different kind of 5-6 than that 3-8 year before. I mean, it wasn't just because they won a couple of more ball games. You just felt that this team was headed in the right direction. Pat Dye's first year was 5-6, and
Chizik lost to Kentucky in year one, and people were worried, but you felt like
this isn't the same. Let's get a few more pieces and things are going to be better. That's the kind of thing that it needs to be at the least this coming year.
And I don't take me wrong. I'm not saying Coach Golish should win the conference this year. I don't think that's realistic. The people are worn to a nub now, and I sit with a lot of them, and they want to see something. 6-6, I don't know, 7, and I don't know. But
hey Bill, who concerns you the most of the outgoing players? Is there a name or two that you really?
Yeah, which one hurts the most?
That you really wanted to see stick around?
I liked Woodyard. I thought he'd been here a long time.
He was a great story. Really was.
He climbed up the ladder. He was a 5-star. He flipped from Alabama, I believe.
Yes, indeed.
He was just like he worked his way into it. And you would think a guy that worked as hard as he did to finally get on the field and be a major contributor would stick, and maybe it will, maybe it won't. And
Auburn's got an interesting situation at linebacker, though. I mean, with Xavier Atkins, making All-American teams this year and returning. You look at the younger guys that they have as well.
I've heard there's – I mean, look, if Riddick sticks around.
If DeMarcus Riddick sticks around with Elijah Melendez and Juice Diaz, I mean, there's some really exciting young talent on this linebacker group.
Not to downplay Woodyard as an answer to that question, though.
But you know, like I said, I just hope they can string together something – better than a 5-7 season.
Oh, yeah.
I think another 5-7 season is going to be too much for, I'll be honest with me. 5-7 next year, I'm walking away from it. I watch it on TV, and I go to a lot of games, home and away, and I'll say to myself, self, I'm not doing this anymore. I hope Coach Golish does well. I'm supporting him. What's going to happen when the portal really opens up? What about 20 more guys are in it? I mean, can you stand that kind of attrition?
No, that's a really good question. I do think that the majority of the players you'll know before the portal opens, because there's such a short period of time from when it opens until when classes start at whatever school they're going to be.
And I think there are freshmen from this year's team that look like they have promising futures, but I do wonder how many freshmen from this year's team I would say, oh yeah, you need to prioritize. You know for sure you've got a high-level starter right there, and you need to pay that sort of price.
I think I mentioned a couple of the guys. Yeah,
I think winners and Fagans come to mind as the first. And I guess there were pictures on social media of Coach Golish and DJ Durkin meeting with the with the whole family, pretty recently. So you would suggest, yeah, maybe he's a priority as well. Some folks would say the defensive linemen, you know, would be guys that
sure.
that
Jordan
have
Crawford and Malik Autry.
I think some people would say Omar would be in that. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, they know more than I do. I'm just the fan on the sidelines, and you guys probably know more than I do too. It's just a bit concerning, but at the end of the day, you know, we're. It'll wear off, and we'll, like Novocaine, it'll wear off, and we'll see next year roll around, and we'll get behind them, and hopefully we see some progress.
Well, it makes it tougher, right, Bill?
You guys have a Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
You too, Bill. Great hearing from you.
What makes it tougher is that you don't have news right now of who's coming.
Right.
Auburn,
well,
right?
And
the other thing,
and we don't, you know, you don't know what the offers are. Don't know.
And you don't always know the offers in the pros.
No, you don't. You have a pretty good idea, though. They get publicized a lot more. But I mean, it is a very strange situation right now, just thinking of what has to be going on, what is going on right now, where you have basically you have this much money to spend, and I know we've had people say, you know, we'll spend more. Well, sometimes you may not have more that you can spend right now, but let's say the number is $25 to $30 million. You still have to figure how you're going to spend that, and each player is affecting that in some way or another. So I mean, if as has been reported, if Jake Crawford and Kay and Lee are each looking for $1 million, all right, that's nearly 6% of your entire roster for two corners.
It sounds a little bit like when baseball teams are negotiating with players they've drafted, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, all right, well, we've got you slotted for this amount of money. And if you want more than that, you might need to go find it somewhere else, or you might need to go back into the draft and go try again next year.
Yeah.
Or maybe we'll have enough money left over to like it's got to be. Yeah, maybe it leads to some painful conversations as far as who to keep and who to let explore the market. I do think you came up with a pretty good list when we were talking about the biggest dominoes that haven't fallen yet. Like if Alex Golish can hang on to
most of those guys,
the bulk of the guys we named, I think you're in pretty good shape. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, as far as you don't want to be looking for aircraft carriers in the portal, because there aren't that many. If you're talking about, like, you don't want to be looking for guys who project as a top three, top five player at his position in college football in the transfer portal, because there aren't that many of them. And when you have one of those, generally you need to treat them like they're worth their weight in gold. Right, and so you could debate how many of those guys Auburn has, but it feels like, you know, some of the guys you mentioned might be those kind of players, and you better try to make it work with them.
All right, we need to get to our final break of hour number one. Love to hear from you. Anything on your mind, sports wise, here on the Tuesday Drive.
Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday. So far, we've refrained, although Dan's threatening to just. We sing Christmas songs.
Pa-rum-pa-pum-pum.
Yes. Bing and Bowie. That was a very, very interesting duet there.
Now, I was unaware. So this aired, Bing died relatively suddenly, and this mm-hmm. aired posthumously?
Yes, it did.
Wow, okay. So that must have been... It was, and you were used to Bowie doing some weirder stuff mm-hmm. at that point.
Oh, yeah.
Although this is pretty weird. This is pretty weird, too. But no, it must have been... powerful to folks seeing and hearing it for the first time.
Oh yeah, no question about it. I mean, if you want to give us any of your Christmas faves, it's usually we've done that a lot on the last day before mm-hmm. your favorite Christmas song, your favorite Christmas, you know, obviously movie.
Oh, the Phil Spector album is full of so
absolutely.
Many of the good ones, right?
It's
the Merry Christmas to You, and it's got Baby Please Come Home, Darlene Love, yep. which is probably my favorite, but the famous...
Sleigh Bells is outstanding.
I think that's the Frosty the Snowman from, I think it's the Ronettes, right? That version of Frosty the Snowman's on that album. Like, there's lots of good stuff. Sinatra and Dean both did really, really fun Christmas albums.
It's Elvis's Christmas.
Elvis,
album.
Sure, Blue Christmas, right? Yeah. I mean, that's there. Yeah, there's some fun stuff out there for sure. Oh, and Burl Ives, right? I mean, Holly Jolly Christmas by Burl Ives is one of the best.
And then
ever.
The Singing Cowboy. I mean, he had two of the all time greatest, Gene Autry.
Okay.
Did Rudolph and Frosty?
Rudolph and Frosty.
My goodness.
And I know folks are more partial. Yeah. Like
Rudolph, was it Rudolph or? I think it was Rudolph. Either Rudolph or Frosty was offered to Bing Crosby, and he said, "Nah, that's not going to be a hit." And it turned out okay.
Oh,
although White Christmas did all right for Bing. Is it still the all time greatest selling single?
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. Is fantastic. That special. I think it's on Peacock, and it's still only like a half hour.
Yeah,
or something, but
it's
just great. Oh, the original mm-hmm. the original Grinch animated thing is outstanding. And I know
some
folks are
into that now.
I know some folks are really partial to like Mannheim Steamroller Trans-Siberian Orchestra, right? Like, you got those, like, the heavier, like, Christmas stand, the Carol of the Bells and stuff they do is always great.
And then there's plenty of Christmas rock through the years.
Beach Boys, right? Little St. Nick?
Oh, well, I mean, you can go, you know, all the Beatles, Eagles, and I mean, there's just, there's tons and tons of, that's what, it's like, back in the day, everybody had to have a Christmas song or a Christmas, if not a Christmas album, a Christmas song. Once they were established, they had to have their own Christmas song. All right, we'll get to our top of the hour break. Yeah, we can talk, sports, music, movies, whatever you want. It's the last show of the year, so come on in and join us.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two, final hour of The Drive for not just today or this week, this year. As we are getting some time off, and we'll be back with you next Friday, January 2nd. So getting a little time to spend with the family here over the holidays. Love to hear from you here in the final hour. We spent the first hour, talked a good bit about, Auburn football, talked some Auburn basketball, and then talked a little Christmas stuff toward the end of the first hour. And we'll head whatever direction you would like in the final hour of The Drive.
There are reports that this hour of the show is going to be holly and jolly, Bill.
Well, Burl would appreciate
that. That's right.
That.
There you go.
You ever know anybody named Burl?
No, that's
I had a relative that was, his name was Beryl, but it was pronounced, but he pronounced it Burl.
I'm the grandson of an Earl, but I don't know Burl, I don't know any other Burls. I'm going to file that away as a first name that you don't.
Burl Peck.
You know, it's like
keep that one in mind.
Jimmy Hoffa's middle name was Riddle, like James Riddle Hoffa. I think Riddle's a really Riddle's a really cool first
Riddle
name for
this.
A first name for a guy. All right.
334-321-1390. That's The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybarn. Terry has been hanging on since the end of hour number one. Hey, Terry.
Hey, bud.
Hey guys, how y'all doing today?
Good.
Great. You guys were talking about the portal and Auburn's losses. How much do you attribute it to NIL, and how much is attributed to Neil to Golas just changing course, just changing? Because the sophomores and juniors that are leaving, a lot of guys that won 5 and 6 ball games over the past 3 years.
That's the million-dollar question. Mm-hmm. Like how much of this is Auburn not meeting the demands of the player they want to keep, and how much of this is Auburn deciding, well, maybe they can find a comparable player in the portal for less, and how much of this is the player deciding they don't want to stay at Auburn amid, you know, what they've experienced the last couple of years. And it's unknowable right now, you know, what sort of the Venn diagram looks like of, you know, what players, you know, of how guys fit in. But I think a mass exodus would certainly have folks concerned about the approach Auburn is taking to retaining its roster.
You certainly don't want to see this many guys leave, but that's a concerning thing. A lot of you guys have experienced losing seasons. So, you know, is Golas going to change the attitude? Is that what he wants? And he spoke that in his introductory press conference.
No, you're absolutely right. And he talked with us about it again last week. I mean, he talked about the players to a man saying how much they loved Auburn and how much and that they wanted to be at Auburn. And it appears that, I mean, part of what's going on is, well, do you want to be at Auburn enough to either take a cut or not get the kind of increase that you might want because we have you slotted at this? As we were talking in the first hour, I mean, you've got to have an idea of what every player is worth and be able to negotiate that, you know, can you get them for a little less than that? Or how much more can you go above that before you have to then say, well, good luck to you if we can't go that much.
And as we said in the first hour, I do think some of the biggest dominoes when you talked about guys, you know, underclassmen you would want to retain for at least one more year, I think some of the biggest ones have not announced any sort of decision yet for Auburn. Mm-hmm. Cam Coleman, Eric Singleton, Jeremiah Cobb, Connor Liu, and holding on to Atkins was huge in that regard too.
Yeah, and Golish is drawing the line at what guys are worth and what they might think they're worth.
Okay. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, but every school is eventually, I mean, they're going to have to do something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, what he's saying is, and he said this again Friday, when we had him on Friday, I don't know if you heard the interview when we had him on Friday.
I did.
He said, you know, he was talking about they want to recruit and they're going to spend to get the elite players, but you don't want to have situations where you have players that have proven what they can do and deserve to be making more money, looking and seeing someone coming in who's already making more than they are.
Yeah, and people, I know fans in general, I'm one of them, you judge things based on what the last thing you've seen. The last thing you've seen, Auburn's offense wasn't that bad, but for the most of the year, Auburn's offense stunk.
You're right.
It was really bad. I mean, really bad.
Oh, no, I mean, to the point where it became a crisis to the degree where you had to make a midseason change. And I think that, you know, some folks were maybe thinking, well, if you retained as much as possible from the offense you had at the end of the season and gave it another year, could you have successfully better results? You're not going to have that next year when you look at, there's obvious offensive line turnover because of the guys graduating and moving mm-hmm. on. Ashton Daniels now going into the portal. And moving on, and you'll see how many of the receivers stick around. Again, you know, Cam and Eric feel like really big pieces as far as deciding what they're going to do, regardless of who Alex Golish can bring in.
Yeah, and you know, Cam, it just feels like Cam is the guy. He is probably the one player, even though he hasn't posted All-American numbers. Everybody knows what he can do and what he's capable of. He's a guy from just down the road in Phoenix City. And if he were to leave, I think he is the one right now that, boy, if there's one that you just feel like if in any way possible you can avoid losing him, the fan base, I think there'd be more reaction if Cam moved on than just about anybody else on this team.
Yeah, and last thing, guys. There was so much pressure to keep DJ Durkin. They kept him, and look what's happening.
Of course, DJ's not, you know, I mean.
I don't think the only reason.
I don't think it's anti-DJ Durkin is the reason any of the players are leaving.
But. And I don't think the only reason to keep DJ Durkin was the belief that players would stay. I think it was also the results he'd gotten, because players had left.
And the reaction the players had for DJ and how much they expressed they wanted him to stay.
I think it's sort of his ability to shape a quality defense out of whatever he has. Like it would have been great to see some of these young players stick around, but I think DJ Durkin's shown over these last two seasons he can make it work with almost whatever you give him, right? When you think about the turnover from the first year to the second year as well. So would some of these players stick around if DJ Durkin had gotten the head coaching job? Like, it's another unknowable sort of hypothetical for Auburn. But no, I don't know if it proves very much as far as players deciding to leave, even though DJ Durkin and for that matter Von Trell sticking around on the defense.
Yeah, I mean, because thus far the biggest names have been on the defensive side that have decided to enter the portal.
I mean, you'll never know the answer to that question if DJ been the head coach or not. Unless you guys have a Merry Christmas, enjoy your time off, and take care and see you next year.
You too, Terry.
Absolutely, Merry Christmas. Terry. Merry Christmas.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
Let's get to Pat, who's been hanging on.
Hey, guys. Hey, I just want to clear a couple things up that was said yesterday. I'm not going to go off on it like a long thing, but then I want to talk about basketball. What I was saying was, I believe it's inevitably going to be where you don't have the NCAA doesn't have the ability to tell you how long you can be in college. So I was just saying that will solve it. But they could always go to 6 years. 6 years, play six, short term, temporary fix. Nobody would complain. Everyone would come back for 2 years. You'd eliminate the hurricane that we're in right now. the monumental hurricane we're in. I mean, to me, it's almost kind of funny. It's like, oh, we have to preserve the sanctity of the college athlete when, like, no, like, basketball players go for one semester and then they're gone.
Bill, how do you feel about hold on a sec, Pat. Bill, how do you feel about 6 years to play six for college athletes? Is that too much? Is that right around where you'd like to?
I think five's plenty, but I mean, whatever. I mean, well,
I'm just talking about to help out the squeeze we're in right now. Because I think ultimately it's going to go unlimited.
I don't know. The squeeze, are you talking Auburn's in or just college athletics?
Demand. The demand for players is what is causing the high prices. There's not enough players to go around, and so not enough good players. All of our skilled five-year starters,
there are never
going to
be
starters.
Enough good players for everybody. I mean, you're never going to have a situation where you've got 30 or 40 teams that are all, you know, as talented as the others.
I'm saying if you infuse an extra 200 starters that are going to leave in the next few years. I guess that's what I'm saying is in 100 schools, you can even go down to division, whatever division one. There are people that we grab from division one and bring them up, and then they play it. And so I'm just saying is you would just keep a lot more talent in the pool, so then people couldn't command $2 and $3 million. That's my whole point. I'm not saying that I wanted a 40-year-old guy to be playing. I'm just saying I don't understand the whole. It's almost like I feel like we're drowning in the ocean, and a boat, one of those drug runner boats, drives by, and you're like, nope, I'd rather just drown. It's like whether it's 6 years or, you know, to me, because there's not going to be any Barry Sanders. I mean, one of the comments made, I don't want to see Barry Sanders when he's 30. I mean, Barry Sanders is going to be playing when he's 19 in the pros. So that's not, you're never going to have a problem with quality athletes or, you know, people like that. It's all I was trying to say was that if you added another 100 players to the pool, if when the portal opens, instead of having five quarterbacks, there'll be 17 quarterbacks. That changes the whole dynamic of how much they can command. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I think that. No, you're right. From a supply and demand standpoint, if you had more, if the unlimited eligibility didn't necessarily, like, you have that gap of players that are good college players that don't necessarily translate to the NFL. If they could continue their college career for a few more years, that would seemingly provide. You'd have more talent available. It would give more leverage to teams, mm-hmm. right, when negotiating
right.
with players,
right.
because they'd,
right.
they'd have more options as far as where they could go.
And that's what this whole thing is about, yep. is leverage on the side other than the players, because yep. that's what it is right now. And it has been, you know, since NIL has come along and the transfer portal allowing players to leave every year, all the power has been with the players. There's got to be something, whether it is, as you're saying, allowing players to play longer, or coming up with some kind of, you know, collective bargaining like Brian was talking about, or, you know, some kind of, I'm not saying salary caps, because if you're able to have some leverage on both sides, then that'll keep it from just continually, you know, spiraling out of control.
Okay, so what was your other point, Pat?
Yeah, exactly. So that was my main point for that, okay. in basketball I want to talk about. But the main thing, I wasn't trying – I'm just telling you where I think it's going to end up. I think it's going to end up where the Supreme Court's going to say you're not allowed to tell someone how long they go to college. So I was just saying in the short term, you could just add an extra year or two, and then that would stop the oh, this guy's getting $3 million. That's all I was trying to say. And then what I was going to talk about basketball is, okay, so – we are supposedly limited with 15 scholarship players.
13, okay? As a matter of fact, I think is what it is.
Okay, I thought it went to 15, but I keep hearing 13, and I keep hearing 15. But I guess the question is, I heard it was just changed to 15, but maybe that's not true. But either way,
Auburn's at the max, whatever, right now.
Yeah, but so we don't have enough is the question if we want a big man. And I guess the question, somebody posted that, you know, why do they have to have a scholarship? Why when people play without scholarships, right? So why can't we just give them an NIL deal, and then they just don't get this, then they use their NIL money to pay the scholarship?
Because, all right, this is something that all schools had agreed on years ago, that if a player is recruited by multiple schools, he's going to count as a scholarship player. Walk-ons, guys that come in and are walk-ons that just get NIL money are players that haven't been – pursued by schools at your level.
So somebody already thought of that workaround to the scholarship limit, and they made a rule that everyone sort of agreed on to
keep teams that just had extra money from just being able. It sort of started, you know, Bear Bryant used to have players and coaches that were on scholarships for other sports, and then they said no, football's going to take priority. But that's something that sort of came along. With that, it was sort of Nebraska. Remember, Nebraska used to have a famous walk-on program. Well, it turned out that, you know, some of those guys were being heavily recruited by other schools, and other schools went, wait a minute, this guy's not a walk-on. You know, he turned down scholarship to Oklahoma or to Texas or whatever to go to Nebraska. So the other schools, all the schools in the NCAA agreed that, yes, if players had been recruited and had been offered by other schools, they would count as a scholarship player. So as long as you've got scholarship limitations, that's what's keeping you from being able to do that.
Okay, well, then I have the answer for Stephen Pearl, if you're listening. We just gave a walk-on a scholarship. So pull that walk-on scholarship away. Give the walk-on the NIL money for the scholarship, and then give the scholarship to the player that we want to get.
Well, as a matter of fact, Stephen was talking about that last week. One of the changes that the NCAA has made is now, once you have your scholarships set for a year, you can't replace them. No matter if a player leaves, if a player is injured, no matter what, they say that is your scholarship limit for the year. So that's what's the biggest problem Auburn.
I've got an idea, Pat, and I do, because I don't know what kind of big man you're going to find right now.
You say Oklahoma got one. Yeah. Oklahoma got a 7'2" Russian.
Ooh, okay, I guess you could dip into the Euro pool and see what you get. But I'm look, 87, Brandon Frazier. Big,
I hear you.
Tall, in shape. He was a very.
He's only 6'6", though. He's only six.
Yeah, he's. I mean, he's
they,
about.
They look like six. They. Hey, Dan, they look like giants on the football field, but when they get out there on the basketball court, yeah, it's not the same.
He's rocking about the same size as Broom, right? I mean, they're.
Nah.
Yeah, no, that's. I wish Dylan would have stayed, but I guess. All right. Well, that's
he's,
cool.
He's playing NBA like minutes.
Yeah, he got called back up.
Dylan's playing quite a bit for the Kings.
Yeah, I know. I'm happy for him. I'm trying to solve our problem.
Oh
right
yeah,
now.
No kidding, man. Good luck.
All right. Hey, Merry Christmas, guys. Y'all have a great one.
Merry Christmas.
Appreciate it.
Happy New Year.
And that's exactly what one of the things Stephen was talking about. I mean, they're very, you know, obviously frustrated with the fact that Emeka is out for the year. And even if he'd been injured in the very first game, he was on the scholarship to start the season, and so you can't replace him. That was talked about a few years ago when there was concern about schools cutting players. They didn't want schools to be able to cut players from scholarship and put somebody else on. 334-321-1390. We need to get to our first break. Right back with more of your phone calls here on the Tuesday Drive.
There's nothing more refreshing than a nice
334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Again, our final show before the new year. We will be back on January 2nd. We'd love to hear from you as we head into our final 35 minutes or so here on this Tuesday.
I'm going to try to connect with Jake in the next segment, Jake Crane from Crane and Company, and chat with him a little bit about the college football playoff and everything going on with Auburn as well.
In the meantime, let's get back to the drive hotline, and James is up next. Hey, James.
Hey, bud.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Great show. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas.
Absolutely. Back at you.
Right back at
and
you.
And, of course, for our friends out there who are of the Jewish faith, happy Hanukkah.
Sure.
Want to make sure I cover everybody.
Absolutely.
There's a couple of things I want to talk about. One, for any clown who says that the bowl doesn't matter, they need to, they don't know what they're talking about. Last week I saw the Jacksonville State Troy game, and it was a great game. Mm-hmm. And those kids fought hard. I really do think that one way to change bowl games, one, try to make bowl games regional if you can, and two, at bowl games, both schools receive a purse, meaning if it's a $2 million purse, one school receives $1 million, the other school receives the other million. This is what I would do. I would add an additional $1 million, and then I would split it $500,000, and I would give, since we're in the days of NIL, I would give those kids a check from one school and a check to another school. Now, I'm willing to bet you the kid that doesn't play and wants to get ready for the pros, let him get ready for the pros. Not a problem. But the kid that sits the bench and becomes the practice bait, he wants to play because he wants that check. Now, I'm willing to bet you if you do that, you're going to change the attendance, meaning players wanting to play bowl games.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about that, as a matter of fact, here during leading up and during the bowl season about NIL really becoming more involved to try to keep the bowls alive to give incentive. I mean, you know, in the pros, I remember it used to be a big deal before players were being paid as much as they are now. The winning Super Bowl check or the winning World Series check, the winning team would get a higher paycheck than the losing team. And that was incentive for a lot of the guys that were either fringe players or you weren't superstars to get that extra pay.
If you view players not wanting to participate in bowls as a problem that needs to be fixed, then yeah, I would say directly compensating the players from the bowl games. You know, maybe have an amount of money that you get for playing. Maybe even like the players' era, have an extra amount of money you get for winning. Right, like, have a winner's purse. Like you could do it that way. I do wonder if some of this is evidence that there are too many bowl games, and that some of them could, you know, some of them could go the way of the dinosaur, and it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for the sport. But no, I think, you know, you've seen the non-conference tournaments in college basketball.
Right.
Decide to take the route of let's add to the intrigue by directly compensating the winning teams with NIL and paying a little bit extra to based on how you finish. And I don't think that'd be I don't think it poisons the amateurism of this endeavor in any meaningful way. And so it's like, yeah, you could let bowl games pay kids, and I still think you'd get I don't see the harm in bowl games paying the players to participate.
Me neither. And with something else that we have to consider, many years ago in the distant past, during the 1970s and 80s, we did not have as many D1 programs back then, hence not as many bowl games.
Oh, you're right.
The requirements to get into a bowl game was probably a lot I wouldn't say stiffer, but
it was James. I mean, if you saw teams that lost two ball games, not be able to make it to bowl games. I mean,
right.
Now it's a stretch to have teams that are 500 in every single game.
Right, and the thing about it, we have more teams that are D1, D1A, and whatnot. And then the other piece that I want to briefly talk about is, I don't know, it's Greg McElroy who says they need to expand the playoff games to 16 games to include the group of five. I think he played football too many times without a helmet. He doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. I know he played at Big Bad Bama. I know. I understand he's a Rhodes Scholar and he's intelligent. I get it. But let's be realistic. The group of five teams and programs does not have the same cachet, does not have the same oomph, does not have the same budget as the Power Four conference. Let's just be real. Troy does not have the same budget as Bama or Auburn. Neither does USA, neither does Jacksonville State. And to pit those teams against the Georgia and Alabama, or hell, even in Oregon, you're going to lose every time. I still think, and whoever's listening, please put your thinking caps on, and let's make this happen. The group of five need to have their own tournament, to have their own national champion.
James, when the playoff was smaller, I was in favor of the group of five having their own playoff. If you were talking about a 4-team playoff or an 8-team playoff at the major, at the bowl subdivision level, I'd say, yeah, you know what, at that point, maybe have another tournament that group of five teams could realistically make and win. If you're talking about a 16, I think it's entirely realistic that a group of five conference champion could be one of the 16 best
teams. Now, see, that's my point is, I don't think they have to be, though.
No, and I would say that if you're going to mandate a spot for a group of five conference champion, 16 is probably the smallest number the playoff should be. Where, like, it,
so
I think,
be,
like,
so
12.
Let's be real. Oh, okay. What happened to, when Oregon played JMU, and JMU is a good football team. Not taking anything away from JMU. JMU got the hell beat out of. Let's just be real.
They did. They did. But I would also say you've seen some major conference teams get stomped into a blow. Like when Georgia beat TCU by a million in the national championship game a couple years ago. That alone wasn't reason to say, all right, well, let's stop inviting the Big 12 to the party.
And I have no problem. But here's the thing, though. TCU pays a lot more and have a bigger budget and have better players than the Texas State. Let's just be real. If we aren't, being real, we're kidding ourselves.
But inclusion in the playoff.
Saying Beyonce is going to be my wife one day. That's crazy.
But inclusion in the playoff matters a lot more to those teams with the smaller budgets too, right? I mean,
what,
that you think about
the hell beat out of them?
Well, to make the playoff, right? I mean, there were 16 seeds were getting the hell beaten out of them for a while in the NCAA men's basketball tournament, but then a couple of them won. Right,
okay.
You suddenly had
they won a game. I mean, I understand what James is saying, and James, I'm a little more on your side on this one. And whatever the field is, I want the best number of teams. If it's 16 teams,
right.
I want the 16 best teams in there. If one of them happens to be a group of five, fine. But I don't want to put a group of five in there just to have one in there.
Which is probably right, and that's more palatable with 16 than it is with 12. I think the thought that you're going to include a group of five team.
And all the reason why they're doing this stuff is because one school who's not part of a conference, who is a Catholic school, cried because they didn't get picked. Okay, I got it. Notre Dame didn't get picked. Granted. But the thing about it is, I agree, Notre Dame would have been a better game than against Ole Miss or, hell, even Oregon. I would have rather seen BYU, Vandy, or Oregon or Notre Dame to play against Oregon or Ole Miss versus a Tulane
or JMU. Yeah, I agree. Hey, James, great stuff. We're up against it. We've got to get to our bottom of the hour break here shortly. Appreciate the call. Happy holidays. You want to try to catch?
Right. Well, how about this? Real quick, Ty the Tiger.
Yeah, we'll get Ty before we get to our bottom of the hour break. Hey, Ty.
Hey, guys, I think what a lot of us old school people are kind of living off of that want to include that group of five is that Oklahoma beat Boise State Fiesta Bowl. Like that image still lives in our head where Boise State took down the big guy, and we still think it can happen. It can't happen in this college football in this day and age. Those teams, those group of fives, they're just not going to be the same. They're not going to be able to compete.
Well, I think if you expand it enough, it could happen in the early rounds, like a 16 beating a 1 in the NCAA tournament. They're not going to win the title, but they could pull off an upset somewhere.
But I just think that with the way things are being picked apart now with the transfer portal, you don't have those Boise State teams like you used to.
You're right.
That, you know. And so you don't have those strong teams with the 4-year seniors like Boise State did. I mean, Boise State had a squad that year, and you're not going to have those teams again because those players are going to go get paid at Oklahoma and Auburn and Miami. And that's why if you didn't have the transfer portal in the way it was, then yes, it could work. You have to put them in, and basketball is different. So we can't look at, okay, well, you know, there's been, you know, twos or 15s upset twos before and all that in the NCAA. Like, that's different to me. Football is a lot different on a court in a game play than a basketball game. But I just think that we really do keep remembering that Fiesta Bowl, mm-hmm. and I don't think that'll ever really happen again. Not like that. So that's my two cents.
Great stuff.
Need to get to our bottom of the hour break. We're going to check in and see if we can catch up with Jake Crane here on the other side as we head into the final half hour of the final show of 2025 here on The Drive.
Now, more of The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. It is our final show of 2025. We're getting a break through New Year's. We'll be back next Friday. And, man, will there be a lot to talk about then? It's not like there isn't anything to talk about now. And speaking of that, though, let's get to the Drive hotline. Welcome in our regular Tuesday afternoon guest. That's Jake Crane from Crane & Company. Happy holidays, Jake.
Hey, happy holidays. Merry Christmas to everybody out there. What an amazing time of year, not only for the holidays, but for sports as well, you know, even though Alabama won.
Yeah, and a game that Oklahoma looked like, I mean, they looked like they might run Alabama out of the stadium there early on.
Bill, they sold. The punter drops the ball. Mateer basically just hands it off to the corner to go run for a touchdown. You know, and you got to give credit, obviously, to Alabama. You know, the intestinal fortitude of that team, mm-hmm. after what happened against Florida State, and the way they looked down the stretch. Not that it was perfect against Oklahoma, and Oklahoma helped, but man, what a collapse!
Oh yeah,
by you know, especially when you have a defense like Oklahoma.
Oh, we may have lost Jake.
I think the signal was fighting him for a little while, and we'll see if.
Hey, can
y'all? Here we go. We got you back.
We lost you for a lot of
now,
that.
Look, okay. Yeah. Long story short, with Oklahoma's defense, you get up 17. The fact that they lost that game is just a collapse, unlike I've seen in a while. To be honest.
Yeah, Choklahoma.
And despite the disappointing offensive performances by Oklahoma and Texas A&M, we were saying earlier, I think the best eight teams feel like they're in the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
Right? And the matchups we get here, I mean, we'll see what Texas Tech can do. You know, as a Big 12 team that's relatively unproven against the best teams in college football, Miami is representing the ACC. In a lot of ways in these ensuing games, but yeah, it feels like you've got four really interesting quarterfinal matchups. After all the talk about the field that we've had so far,
without a doubt. And look, we've got to find a better way. And I've proposed a way to pick the best teams that we possibly. James Madison and Tulane. It's not a knock against the Group of Five. I don't think they should be kept out or eliminated from having a chance. But the way we go about selecting teams for this tournament is an absolute joke. But you do feel like, at least at this point, with the matchups we have, you do have the eight best teams left. Now, again, we can talk about Vandy, we can talk about BYU, we can talk about Texas and Notre Dame, this, that, or the other. But at this point, there's not a matchup I'm looking at coming up that doesn't look fantastic to me.
Yeah, I mean, we will find out. Indiana, the number one seed, and it's been an unbelievable season and 2 years. I mean, for Kurt Cignetti, but an unbelievable season this year for Indiana. They've got the Heisman Trophy winner in Fernando Mendoza, but Alabama's more talented.
Without a doubt. And look, that injury to Stephen Hanley, the defensive lineman for Indiana, is a big one. Because while they've upgraded the roster, obviously the depth on that defensive side of the ball and that defensive line is still not where the Alabamas and the Georgias and the Ohio States are. But I will say this about Indiana. If Indiana gets up on you 17-0, you're not coming back. They don't beat themselves. I don't think Indiana is elite in any of the three phases, but they're pretty daggum good in all three. And this season especially, that's an elite form in its own. And when you look at the way they play with what they do offensively, they know who they are. Defensively, they know who they are, and they don't beat themselves. And, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, the fact is most teams lose games. They don't win them. Indiana does not lose games. You're going to have to beat them to beat them.
You feel really strongly about any of the other playoff matchups that we've got? Georgia, Ole Miss, a rematch?
I can't wait for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel really good about Georgia. I feel really good about it. If you go back and watch that first game, it went about as perfect for Ole Miss as mm-hmm. it could go, and you still ended up losing. And if you think that Kirby Smart's not going to make the right adjustments defensively with Glenn Schumann going into this game, I feel better about taking Georgia to cover than any other team in any.
That's pretty strong, but I mean, yeah, and of course, Pete Golding, game two as a head coach, they did what they needed to take care of Tulane, but yeah, hard to argue that you would think Georgia with much more advantage here the second time around.
Well, is Bill? Let me ask you this: Do you think Georgia's the best team left or the second best team left?
I don't know how good Ohio State is. I mean, Indiana may be the best team, but as far as the one that I'd pick, I'd say Georgia or Ohio State may be the two that I'd look at.
I mean, but it makes it more fascinating, you know, this year is we feel like we don't know the end of the movie yet. Mm-hmm. And you know, again, in past years, we felt like we know who was going to win. I will say this about Ohio State. I picked Ohio State to win it when the playoff selection came out. I still think they have the most margin for error. You know, you got to give credit to Indiana for beating them, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't know if they're going to screw up twice, man. They're so talented. Mm-hmm. Especially on the defensive side of the ball. I don't know what you do with those guys.
Yeah, if we get a Georgia-Ohio State semifinal, like that game is going to be like that. We've had semifinals in the past that felt like you knew going in exactly what was going to happen. You've had some blowouts in that round in the past in previous college football postseasons. You get a Georgia-Ohio State semifinal here. That will feel like it'll be like one of those Final Four games where it feels like either team could genuinely be the best team in the country.
Yeah, and you feel like the winner of that one's probably going to be your champ.
Right, and you could get...
Yeah, kind of like the Auburn-Virginia Final Four game, right?
Absolutely.
You know, I hate to bring that up.
Among other notable examples, yeah, that's one of them. And then on the other side, you've still got Indiana and Alabama and Oregon and Texas Tech. So, I mean, I wouldn't just dismiss the possibility that your champion could come from that side of the bracket, but... that Georgia Ohio State matchup potential matchup in the semifinals looms really, really large.
Yeah, it's basically the plot to the Pacific Rim movie.
That's a giant monster against a giant robot, like dude.
Yep, that's it. It's Godzilla versus King Kong. Let's just here we go.
Jake, got to get your thoughts on the all the movement that there has been here pre-portal, especially for Auburn. A lot of folks, you know, we're more than a little concerned, feeling like, well, DJ Durkin was retained, but you look up now and half the guys that people were penciling in as returning defensive starters have already announced they're entering the portal now, with Robert Woodyard adding to that list today.
Yeah, I mean, look, Auburn's pretty deep at linebacker. I'm not worried about. But overall, I think, you know, the main thing people need to understand is Alex Golish owes none of these guys anything, owes none of them anything. And as good as Auburn has been at points on defense, I guess you can say, this is still a group that has not won a lot of games, that doesn't really know how to win. So at the end of the day, and I think Golish is going about this, you're not going to leverage Auburn because you were part of a 5-win team. I mean, what do you think you've done? I would rather bring in guys that know how to win, that may not be as talented but know how to win, as opposed to guys that want to leverage Auburn against other places to get more money and then want to leave. You know, you can go lose anywhere. I think Auburn needs some new blood in here. And not saying that some of these guys aren't talented, and you would love to keep all the talented guys and let them conform to the culture, but I've seen a lot of talented guys that lose games. So I'm going to trust Alex Golish to make the right decisions. A guy who's won at a place that wasn't winning. And look, Auburn's still got some guys coming back. I mean, it's not like there's been just crazy mass exodus. But if the car didn't work in 2025, I'm not going to sit here and break the bank to bring it back in 2026. I think there needs to be a trimming of the fat. And I think what Alex Golish is telling guys right now is, look, at the end of the day, you're either a Tiger or you're Tiger bait, man. The choice is yours. This old caving into the players thing has got to stop at Auburn. Auburn has got to stop caving in to every demand that anybody that's an above-average player gives. So I trust him to bring in guys that know how to win, that on fourth down can actually make the plays, that don't get pass interferences, that don't rough the passers, that don't give up fourth and 31s to Alabama. Bring some winners in. And I trust them to do that. That's why they hired them. And if you don't want to be a part of it, then go to Arkansas or go to Kentucky or go to somewhere else. And you think Kirby Smart is begging guys to stay? You think Ryan Day is begging guys to stay? Auburn's got to stop being in the business of begging and start being in the business of bringing some guys in here that just want to go win football games, not post pictures and videos on Instagram.
Are there players from the team that Auburn just had, the 2025, like with eligibility remaining, are there guys that you think Alex Golish and his staff should really prioritize as guys that need to stick around to help, you know, help boost the prospects in 2026? Or is it a, you know, because I'm really curious about, and it's unknowable, Jake, but I'm really curious about how many of these guys are going into the portal because they've got a number in mind and Auburn has a different number in mind, and how many of these guys are going into the portal because even though Auburn's maybe willing to meet their price, they're ready for something new that Auburn can't necessarily offer.
Well, you know, to your point, Dan, it's unknowable because, you know, you don't know the personalities of these guys. And most of them are really talented. You don't come to Auburn if you're not a talented football player. But the mental side of it is just as big. So there's obviously a lot of nuance there. You can tell who they've really wanted to keep. Xavier Adkins made his decision pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
I think they notified that one pretty early that he's the guy that needs to stay. There's some others as well. You look at Newboy.
You think about what Adkins did, Jake, in his first year of, like, significant playing time, too. Like, at a position where guys
– he's so good.
At a position –
I mean, Dan, he made big plays in big moments.
Mm-hmm.
You've got some of these guys that are asking for money that got clowned on in big moments. Like, and I'll give you another one, and this will probably not be popular. I would love for Auburn to keep Cam Coleman. But he's got to be better. Mm. Like, you can make circus catches every now and then, and that's great. You've got 57 catches in two seasons. You run two routes. You run a hitch and a vert. Those are the two things you run. So, again, sometimes fans, I think, conflate, oh, this guy made a couple of amazing plays with he's a really good player. I'm telling you right now, I'd take Jeremy Bernard over Cam Coleman in a second. In a second, when you look at production. Because that's what it's about. It's not about making the SportsCenter top 10 play, and Cam Coleman's got more potential than most human beings walking around this planet. But your production isn't great. It's really not. When you look at – I'd take Satania from Oklahoma over Cam Coleman right now, if we're being honest, from a production standpoint. But he makes a one-handed catch against somebody, and all of a sudden they think he's Homelander. I just think Golish understands there's production and there's potential. We need production, and that's what Auburn has to have.
Talking with Jake Crane from Crane and Company here on the Tuesday edition of the Drive. Billy, do we got?
Yeah, we're getting close.
Yeah, Jake, we really appreciate it. It was great stuff as always.
Absolutely, yep. Jake. Merry Christmas to you and your family. Hope you have great holidays. Let everybody know though what you got coming up on Crane and Company, your schedule.
Yeah, for sure, man. Appreciate y'all having me. This is my first Christmas with a child, so I'm gonna be up Christmas Eve trying to put stuff together, so that's going to be
just
fun,
wait.
But I feel like it's a rite of passage. We're easy to find. It's Crane and Company. Just go to YouTube. It's Crain and Company. I think we just hit 200,000 subs. I may be wrong on that. I need to go check. But, yeah, come check us out. Look, you may not agree with us, but at least we say what we think. And, as usual, appreciate you guys having me and hope everybody has a happy and healthy holiday.
Same to you, Jake. Thanks again, man.
Outstanding stuff, Jake.
Talk to you next year. We need to get to our final break of the year. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Mountain High Outfitters is helping you gear up for cooler weather.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final few minutes here as we wind things down for 2025. And we'll get to the phones. And Tex is up. Hey, Tex.
Hey, guys. I didn't disappear off the earth. Just a lot been going on. So just wanted to wish y'all a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. I heard you say earlier that this is your last show for the year. So I just wanted to tell you that before you got off the air.
Appreciate
and
that.
And just a couple things I heard today. What's going to happen when the seats are empty? People like me are going to buy better seats. So I'm going to use my priority and keep on moving up. So it doesn't bother me at all if sometimes there's people who don't renew their tickets. Number two, the discussion about Cam Coleman. Multiple times when the ball is designed to go to the other side of the field, he doesn't even attempt to run a route in case the quarterback had to break away and he might be able to deliver the ball to him. So I kind of agree with Mr. Crane that I'd like to see his full potential because
oh, yeah.
He seems like a freakish athlete. Other than that, hey, guys, love your show. I'll be back in full force once the year ends. Take care.
All right. Happy holidays, yeah. Tex.
Merry Christmas, Tex.
Absolutely. And we want to wish everybody out there, the happiest of holidays for you and your families. It's been another interesting year.
It's just, I mean, the thought that we get to do this, right? It's such a treat. And I hope the thought, you know what? It's what's even crazier is that there are people who enjoy it. Like that listen voluntarily listen and enjoy it and seem to keep coming back for more, and that means the world. And Merry Christmas to everybody out there. Happy holidays and Merry Christmas to you, Bill.
You too, Dan. Yes, be safe, be careful. Hope you have a great time over the holidays, folks. Again, we'll be back next Friday. Man, there's no telling what all will have gone on. looking forward to that, but looking forward to the time off too. So again, safe and happy holidays, everyone. That's going to do it for us. We are out of here.